Good evening. I just wanted to just do a few minutes of the parsha, then we'll get into the Haggadah, which is really very difficult to do in a couple of weeks, to do in a few minutes, obviously, but I'll try to pick out a couple of very important points that I feel are necessary. Just to make certain about the parsha, obviously, we start off the parsha Vayikra with a small aleph, but we've heard much about it. The whole sedra we're talking about, we begin the whole discussion of Karbonis. The major difference of opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban is the purpose of Karbonis. According to the Rambam, obviously, it was to satisfy the need for Klal Yisrael being witness to all their lives growing up in the culture of sacrifices, and God needed to satisfy their need for a certain amount of bloodlust. And so he gave them, this is what they had been used to all their lives, sacrifices. And the Ramban says, absolutely not. That's ridiculous to say. And everything has a purpose, that God did it for a reason. Every carbon, every sacrifice has its purpose and for a very specific reason. The reason that we bring a carbon, the reason obviously is to bring carbon, is to come close to God. But there are certain laws that pertain to it, and when is somebody able to bring, when is somebody chayev, responsible to bring a carbon? And there are different laws about how long we're allowed to eat a carbon for. Sometimes we're given one night and a day. We know the carbon Pesach is only eaten until Chatzos, and only Lemnuyav, only to the people. And part of that is one of the major things that we see in the differences of the time that's allowed. In a normal carbon, we are allowed to eat many times for 2 days and one night. A carbon todah, it has to be eaten in one day. And the reason is we want to maximize exposure level, because if I have to get rid of an animal, if I have to not leave anything over yet, consume an entire animal, which was usually, in terms of a regular size animal, approximately 20 pounds of meat for a person, then therefore, 20 pounds of meat to eat, then it would be very difficult. So I would have to invite a lot of people. And this way, if I wanted to make a big splash in terms of thanking God to get rid of all that meat in the space of one day, I would have to invite many people, and that gives God maximum exposure for his good graces for this particular citizen, and that is why. And the same thing goes for a carbon Pesach as well. We want to maximize the exposure level, so if we have to be mechsas nefashos, if we have to gather many people at the Seder, many people to consume all the meat necessary, it increases the exposure level. And when people gather together in the greater groups that have, it increases the exposure and the thanks to God, and makes it more Barovam Hadras Melech. It's a very important point. One of the main features of bringing the Karbonis is we have certain laws. We have a Karbon Olav Yored. Certain times, if somebody cannot afford to bring the animal, he's caught for being a thief, and now he has to bring an expensive animal to atone for his sin. But if he can't afford to bring that animal, then he is the Rabbanon at the time, the Beis Din, will evaluate his ability to bring a particular animal, all the way down to a cheaper animal, even down to a mincha, to bread, or to turtle doves, and so on and so forth, whatever he can afford. The interesting thing that the Gemara points out to is that if somebody brings it, says, no, I am willing to, he was caught stealing, and now he's willing to bring an expensive carbon beyond his station, so maybe we would think, well, he's fulfilled his obligation anyhow, because he brought something even more important. And the answer is absolutely not. Whatever the rabbis of the time say he is required to bring, that is the carbon he has to bring. For the simple reason, it makes a lot of sense. If he's bringing something more than he can afford, and what he's guilty of is theft, then more than likely, how is he going to afford the sacrifice that's a more expensive one? They're probably going to steal the money to afford that one as well. But what makes somebody able to, you just can't bring a carbon if you want to. In other words, you have to be, the three words that the Gemara, the whole Gemara in Hurri is based on, is a Gemara of 13 blots, and it says, oh, Hodai love. We have a three-word phrase that's used often in this parsha. You have to be aware that you committed the crime. If somebody is unaware he committed a crime and he's not sure, so of course he's going to bring an Ashem Tolui. But more than that, he has to admit, once he realizes, he has to say, had I known that this was the law, I would never have done it. If somebody had approached me and said, this is something you should not be doing, you shouldn't do this, and if my attitude is, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway, then there is no sacrifice that God requires of you. He doesn't want anything from you until you are contrite and want to bring the carbon. And that is the basis of the parsha, and based on all of that. Now what I'd like to do is progress and get to a few very important points in the Haggadah. And we have the different stories that are very interesting in the Haggadah. And of course, one of the major ones is when we say Maisa B'Rabbi Akiva, and that they Shoyi Mesubim B'nei Brak, all the big rabbis came to Rabbi Akiva. And the interesting part of that is, why did they come to Rabbi Akiva? And we say because Rabbi Akiva had a way of making them feel better about certain things. But the reality is, if Rabbi Akiva was so, it says that the Gemara in Makos ends and says, when it says at the end of the Gemara, that they saw Shu'olim Hilchubo, they were visiting the Harabayis, where the Beis HaMikdash had been destroyed, and they saw that the foxes were running wild all over it, and where Hazara Karev Yumas, where anything that would go deserves to die, and nobody's allowed to walk on the Makom HaMikdash that isn't a Kohen of certain status, and therefore, and here, look what it is, it's so destroyed, and they were very, they was in that, it wasn't long after Churban, and they were very distressed, and he made them feel better. He said, if this Nevuah comes true, and then there's a Nevuah that said that eventually everything will be rebuilt, then all of God's prophecies come true, wonderful thinking. And he had a way of making everybody feel better, and the Gemara tells various stories of that nature. The problem we have with that is, we don't say that the story is not true, obviously, but why weren't they crying anyhow? They should have been crying regardless, because even Rabbi Akiva, he's still looking at the situation and seeing the destruction of the Temple Mount. It just shows you the level of that he was able to see. In other words, he had this ability to see, that God gave him the ability to see the future. And in his vision that he was able to see with the Ruach HaKodesh God instilled upon him at that moment, he was able to see the peacefulness of the future, that there would be a time when the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt and Yerushalayim would be occupied by Jews and people walking the street in peace time and having an enjoyable Seder and various things of that. And of course that makes them feel better. But if Rabbi Akiva had that ability because he was so of that kind of a person, then how come the problem that we have with Sfira is a very great problem. With Sfira is the fact is that Shalom Nogu covered Bozeh, that we have the whole problem, one of the reasons for Sfira that we mourn in that time period, because all the students of Rabbi Akiva died. And what was the cause of that? We'll get into that more next week, but that's worth giving some thought. The interesting thing is, we are told that there are four types of sons that somebody has: echad chacham, echad rasha, echad tam, v'echad she'eini yodei alisho. What kind of four sons do we have? There are some speculation that sometimes it could be one son. That's why it has the word echad four times instead of saying just individually four sons, Chacham, Arusha, and various things of that. But there are four types of sons, and sometimes the same child can exhibit different signs in his lifespan, and at different times he has different mood swings, and it could be the same person. But getting away from that, there are different things that are very interesting in the use of the language. When we see the word Russia, the opposite of a Russia is certainly not a Chacham. The opposite of a Russia would be a Tzaddik. And therefore, why doesn't it say Echad Tzaddik v'Echad Russia, or the other way around? But nevertheless, Echad Tzaddik, the purpose of the Seder, when we sit down to the Seder, we say V'Higadeto Levincho Bayom Ahu Leimor. We're trying to, the leader of the Seder, you're having your effect on your children, and you're supposed to be able to explain it to them and give them a sense of Judaism and what the miracle of Pesach is all about, and be able to explain it to them. If somebody is just a tzaddik, a lot of times there are many people out there who just do what they're told. They grew up, and every time they ask the question, they were told, just do what I tell you to do. Don't ask any questions. And they have, at that point in time, when they grow up and have their own families, they will not be able to explain the reasons for why, and they won't be able to pass on the traditions of the Judaism as per se. And therefore, it becomes a major problem. So we want somebody who is a Chacham. A Chacham understands, and that is why what we're saying to the Chacham is, because if we said that to a tzaddik, what does that mean to him? The implication of that, the inference to that is you learn all the Hilchos HaPesach until the last Mishnah in Gemara Pesachim, which is Ein Maftir and Achra Pesach Afikomen. But what does that mean to somebody who cannot learn and somebody who doesn't know the ins and outs and all the rules and regulations and why everything has to be done? On the other hand, a Chacham would understand that you have to learn everything in great detail. But the one other thing that's very important as well, which we have to understand, that when we're talking about a Chacham and a Rasha and a Tom and a She'enu De'alisho, what is the Rasha's problem over here? And when he says, Mo'avodo hazos lochem, the Chacham is not saying anything that's really very different. But what he's complaining about is Mo'avoda Azos Lochem. He's not saying I don't believe in God. He says, I'm a true believer. And I believe in the Torah. I believe in all the mitzvahs. My problem is Mo'avoda Azos Lochem. Why do I have to go through all this work? Do I have to daven three times a day to prove it? I have to wear tzitzis or put on tefillin and daven so long, or make a Seder and have Pesach? I believe everything. Ma, what is all this work all about? I can understand instilling in a child certain level of doing it again and again, but once it's instilled and ingrained upon me, I don't have to go through this whole work of everything again and again. I'm beyond that. But the point is, the more often you do something, it brings you to a different level. So Mo'avoda Azos Lochem is not the answer. And it's obviously he's putting himself as an outsider. But, of course, the major difference in the language is not Eschem and Lochem. It is, he says, the Chacham says, Hashem Elokeinu Eschem, our God, whereas the Rasha doesn't mention God in the phrase at all. But as the Mefarshim also will point out, if we take a look at the psukim in the Chumash, there is one very major difference in the psukim. Where does it say Mo'avodo Hazos Lochem? The pasuk that does that, the preamble to that pasuk, the beginning is V'hayaki Omru Aleichem B'neichem. When your children tell you, the problem is when a child tells you something, he's saying you don't know what you're doing. I'll tell you the way it really is. When a child reaches that stage and he starts to say he can tell his parents better than they can tell him, that is where the problem is, and that is V'hayaki Omru Aleichem Mo'avodo Azos Lochem. The Chacham is in what we answer the Chacham is in reference to the Pasuk, V'higadetol v'hayoki yisholcha bincha leimor. When your children come to a Chacham, he's not telling you anything. When the children ask you what to do, the children come to you and they ask you, what is this all about? In other words, they want you to explain it to them because you've been there. You've had the benefit of the life. You are one of these people that go out from a triumph. But the interesting thing on another level is, why are we supposed to feel as if God took us out of Mitzrayim? Because he did do it for us. Because as we know, the Jews that left Mitzrayim, they languished for 40 years in the desert. They languished for 40 years in the Midbar. They never went into Eretz Yisrael except for Kalev and Yehoshua, only the people who were younger. What happens is when people grow up in a slave mentality, they don't know how to handle freedom. And they just don't rise beyond that. The same thing would happen in the Civil War. The people who had so many of them who were given their freedom found it difficult. People who have been in the army for 20 years, when they get free, they don't know how to live. Not, of course, obviously not everybody, but a significant portion of society, people become lifers. People who get out of jail, who have been in jail for 20, 30 years, and then they're on, and they get on the outside, they end up back in jail for one simple reason. They don't know how to deal with the outside world. And the Jews of the Jews that left Mitzrayim were in the same boat. They did not know how to deal with freedom and make a life for themselves. So when God took us out of Mitzrayim, he took us out for the children and the grandchildren, because they are the people who grew up, they were born as free people. And if we're born as free people, then that's the only thing we know, not servitude, but we grow up in a world where we have to make a life for ourselves. These are very important points. One other thing is when it says, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Harei Ani Kiven Shivim Shana. It's a very strange statement because we know what it means. He was only 18 years old, and it says, he was appointed at that time, he was appointed to be the Nasi, as they ousted Rav Gamliel for instances that I even mentioned last week. And so now Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah at the tender age of 18, but he was concerned and God was concerned that people wouldn't give him the respect if he didn't have at least a little gray hair and didn't look a little older, and therefore gave him overnight white hair. But nevertheless, he says, all of a sudden, he says, Harei ani kiven shiv nishona v'lo zochisi sheteyama yitzias Mitzrayim, Balelos, I'm 18 years old. I'm like a man already. My whole life, I never accomplished what Shimon ben Azai or Ben Zoma, who was 16 years old, who had done this. Look what they, at this young age, they accomplished so much. Ashadarsha Ben Zoma, he was quoted already, became famous at this tender age. And so even though, you see, when a child is saying, my whole life, how much did you live? If you were 70 and you say, in my whole life, it means more to it. But if he's a child, why should he expect to be so famous already? But the fact is, the person that we're quoting was only 16. And he's saying, I was 16 and now I'm 18. And he already accomplished so much when he's even younger than I am. Of course, why were they at the home of Rabbi Akiva? And the point is, as we say, of course, that was the point that he made them feel better. But there's always, if we notice, these one name that's missing from this whole story, who would have seemed to be the first name on the page over there. Of course, this was the home of Rabbi Akiva B'nai Brak. But where was Rabbi Gamaliel at the time? These are the five great rabbis of their time. But, of course, the leader, the Nasi, was missing from the story. Where was Rav Gamaliel at this time? But as we know, this was in the time before the Bar Kokhba revolt. And while the Jews were living in a modicum of solace at this time, from the year from 69 or 70 when Korban took place until the Bar Kokhba revolt, in approximately the year 120, 121, 122, when all of the havoc took place and the destruction. There was, so to speak, a lockdown of the Jewish community. But in this time period, they had a modicum of freedom. But nevertheless, they were still tailing many of the great rabbis because they were afraid of the revolt. And Reb Gamliel always had somebody following him because they were afraid that he would foment rebellion. And that's why even in this story, many of the stories, what happened at Shiagia when they told him, Zman Kriya Shma Shel Shachar, how could they not know? It's light outside. What, they had blackout curtains? Obviously not. So the speculation was that they were in a cave where it was dark and they had watch people, their students were standing watch at the entrance to the cave where they would see them, so they know that they would have no idea that it was getting light outside, and they would be talking about the Haggadah, and they were talking about the all of the laws of Pesach, which teaches us a great lesson, because as we see, the answers are also very simple, but we see what the answer to the Russia is. How come it says V'yafata Amarlo? It starts off by saying that you say to him, but then the language changes and it says, God did this for me. It's like, why aren't you talking to him? He's saying, God would not have done this for you if you're talking and trying to change his mind. But the truth is, many times when somebody is a Rasha and he's telling you what to do, as I said, it becomes very problematic, and there is really the time for conversation has probably ceased. He's not willing to listen to you any longer. And therefore, what you have to do is strengthen your own resolve and know that this is what he might change your mind before you change his mind. And therefore, you close your eyes and you say to yourself, God did this for me, and strengthen your own resolve once again to believe in Judaism. And this is a very important point. Now, when we say there's one very, another very important point that I wanted to mention, when it says that when God gave the Bris Bein Absurim, when God told Abraham the Bris Bein Absurim, and he told him all these things that are going to happen, that they're going to be in his children, will be enslaved for 400 years, and he says to him at the end, when it'll happen, he asks, when will it happen? But God assures him, and he says, you will be buried, you will, when you pass away, you will go back in peace to your forefathers. What forefathers? Who were his forefathers that were tzaddikim? Was it Terach? So on that basis, some of the Mefarshim would like to claim that Terach did tshuva. But the reality is, Avosech is a plural, and therefore was Terach and Terach's father, Nochor, and before that, Sarug, and all these people, were they also righteous people? We have no record of even Terach ever doing tshuva. We just speculate based on the fact that it says, we speculate that Terach maybe would like to think he did tshuva sometime. So these are problems that require a little more introspection and to see, that we'll maybe talk about next week. But these are things I just wanted to make a point of saying, so we give it time to think. And what God tells them is that four generations, but four generations is not from Avraham. So when would it start? When does the time begin? So it says, Baruch HaMokom Baruch Hu Shechishev, we thank God, Chishev HaSakeitz. And the simple answer when we start to do the math backwards, because that's the only way we could do it, when we backtrack 400 years, it comes out from the time they left Mitzrayim, it was from the birth of Yitzhak, so we speculate from the birth of Yitzhak. But nevertheless, even if we count from Yitzhak, it's Yitzhak and Yaakov, and where do we get to only four generations? Even at that point, it comes out to six generations. Somebody wants to speculate, we'll give the answers next week. I'm giving you a little bit of homework this week. Think about it, and next week we'll discuss it. We'll call it here an evening for tonight, but give that a little bit of thought. Excuse me, one more thing to say then. we tell us, it says, V'terach Avi Avraham, Avraham, when it tells us about the Brisbane of Sarm, and it tells Avraham, it says the Avraham, he had Yishmael and Yitzchak, and Yitzchak had Yaakov and Esau, but it mentions the Terach had Mitchila Hayu Ovdei Avodazara Hayu Avoseinu. It's just is, why is it telling us all this backstory? For the simple reason that many of us, unfortunately, some of us grow up in a family where everybody is of like mind, and thank God, we thank God for that when we have, and we can push the same buttons for all our children. Unfortunately, even Terah, on a good way, of course, we know Yitzhak and Rivka, both major tzaddikim, had a Yaakov and Esau, but also Terah, who was a Russia, and it's certainly not from the best when he brought up his children, even while he had Nachor, as the son Nachor, just like his father's name, but he had a son Nachor, but he also had Avraham. There's no telling, a lot of times we could go through life pushing the same buttons with all our children, and some turn out very different than others. Some walk the straight and narrow, and everybody has a different way of looking at the life and accepting things the way they are. And that's why what's so important about the Seder is that when we sit down at the Seder, we have an open mind. And we only talking about the four children of that, the Tom, the Russia, the She'enio, the Alishol. But what about the children that won't even show up at the Seder? There are people who have families where their children, or they might be invited to the Seder, and they won't even show up. At least the Russia is, at one point is, what makes him a Russia? He is still salvageable, because if he's sitting at the table, and it's an open line of communication while he's sitting at the table, and you have the ability to have a conversation with him, there is hope. The lost soul is the one who won't even come to the Seder. And that's what we have to look for, is to keep lines of communication. As we know in the Tochacha, when it says, when we'll get to Bechukosai in a month or two, when we read the Tochacha, and God says, don't treat me like I'm not there, that's when we have a major problem. You could scream at me all you want. You could say I'm terrible and I do this and I'm responsible for all, and you complain. But even if you complain, it means you still believe I'm there. If you still believe I'm there, it means we're still talking. And if we're still talking, there is hope. Have a good week. Have a safe week cleaning for Pesach. And we'll discuss more of the Haggadah next week. Thank you.